Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. Before the break, we heard about the redevelopment work in progress in the largest public housing development in Wisconsin, Milwaukee's Westlawn Gardens. Writer David Barkley Moore understands the challenges faced by many of the people living in concentrated pockets of public housing.
Moore worked for 8 years for the New York-based anti-poverty nonprofit Harlem Children's Zone. His work involved shooting short-form videos that told stories about the people the group was seeking to help.
It was work that provided the underpinnings of his new middle-grade novel set in and around a public housing development in Harlem. The book, which is called The Stars Beneath Our Feet, tells the story of Lolly, a boy whose passion for building with Legos helps him cope in the wake of his brother's death from gun violence. David Barkley Moore joins us in the studio. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, Mitch. I really appreciate it.
You know, Harlem may be as much of a character in this book as any of the people you portray. Can you paint a picture of what Harlem is like today in 2017 versus what many of us might have in mind, you know, the heyday of the 1930s or the blight of the 1970s?
Well, I think it's somewhat in a state of flux. You know, when I moved there years ago in the 90s, it was, you know, I would rent a room and have like an extra kind of an extra bedroom, and it would be hard to get people from lower Manhattan to come up and rent out the room, you know, because they were afraid to come to Harlem, right? Now it's the exact opposite. Everybody wants to be there. I mean, Brooklyn and Harlem are two of the hottest neighborhoods in New York City. And the thing that concerns me, I mean, it's great that Harlem is so successful right now and desirable and people actually want to live there, you know, other than kind of the native Harlemites. But at the same time, a lot of people, I think, are getting kind of forced out, you know. And, you know, I don't even know where a lot of these people are getting forced out to. You know, they're just kind of disappearing. And, you know, a lot of them cannot afford the rents, the new rents there. I mean, I think I remember when I first moved there, I would look at places where the rent was like $300 a month. You know, and now I think the average rent in New York City is maybe like $3,000 for a single bedroom, something like that. So, yeah, and when I, you know, I've always thought the architecture there was amazing. In Harlem, and the book that I've written deals a lot with architecture throughout Harlem and throughout the city. But when I first moved there years ago, you know, the architecture wasn't being developed to its full potential, and now people realize that full potential, and it's being, you know, celebrated and developed and taken advantage of to some degree.
So the central character in this book is Lolly, and he has been through a lot. He has lost a brother to violence. He faces all sorts of different pressures from different sides in this public housing neighborhood in which he lives. Can you talk, though, about the portrait of public housing that you paint? Because I think it feels a lot different than what many of us might have conceived.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. You know, one of the things that I love about New York City is the diversity in the city. It is probably the most diverse location on the planet, I would guess. I want to say Queens is, which is just one borough in New York City. And so I love that. And I've lived there a long time. I've met a lot of different types of people, made a lot of different types of friends, right? And particularly, you know, this book that I've written, you know, The Stars Beneath Our Feet, it's a diverse book. I think diverse books are popular now. You know, it's like a thing. I didn't write it intentionally to be like a quote-unquote diverse book.
Right. I was going to say that it's the you don't call a lot of attention to the diversity. It just is.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's the way living in New York City is a lot. You know, it just is as far as the different types of people that you meet from all types of background, you know, where you can have if you go to the gym, you know, you could have you could be on the treadmill, running the treadmill next to like a prince from somewhere, you know, and you wouldn't know it necessarily. And so a lot of that diversity that pops up, I think, in the novel and the different types of people, even within the public housing, is a reflection of my experiences of living in New York City and how I see New York City and how I think a lot of New Yorkers experience the city, just living in it day to day.
Lolly's been hit with the death of a brother before the book opens, in fact. He sees pressures around him from gangs. And really, as the book opens, he has not worked through his troubles. And so he starts seeing a social worker. And I'm curious where you see the role of the social worker in helping him heal versus his work with Legos versus his kind of budding relationship with a girl who says she's not autistic, but maybe she is autistic.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a good point. I mean, out of all of those things, I think the Legos and his budding friendship with Rosamund probably help him out the most in working through his issues over the death of his brother. Mental health issues within the African American community are very important, very serious. I think that's something that we as a community don't address, or don't take seriously. But that being said, the mental health therapy that is delivered to Lolly in this book is not the best. You know, it's not the worst, it's not the best. You know, and the adult who is the therapist in this book, you know, for me is, you know, a lot of the adults in the novel are faulty. A lot of the characters are faulty. They're not perfect people, right? You know, and so that whole, you know, that whole journey that Lolly takes with the therapist, you know, is a faulty journey. And, you know, but I think it's one that, it's worth kind of taking a look at and kind of examining and experiencing. But the thing that really has most profound effect on him is that his building and his relationship.
Well, and do you think, are those kinds of things, whether it's his building with Legos and his interest in architecture, or it's his friend Vega's interest, you know, proficiency on the violin, are these things kind of underrated when it comes to mental health care, for lack of a better term?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, part of the reason why I wrote the book is because I was dealing with the death of my own brother in real life, my brother Brian, and the book is dedicated to him. And for me, writing this book as a creative act was very therapeutic for me. You know, it helped kind of heal me in a lot of ways. And I think there is a connection between the way that Lolly approaches, and Lolly and his friends in the book approach their creativity, you know, in the novel, and how it heals them. You know, I really strongly believe in that, in the healing power of art, you know, and so much art is being kind of sapped away from not just the school system, but just overall in a lot of aspects of society. And I think it definitely is something that we need to kind of remember and realize for its importance, you know, because it's really powerful stuff.
I've done several interviews over the years about resilience, the idea that maybe we can figure out how to foster resilience in kids who are growing up in difficult circumstances, or whether we can do it at all. Do you think, are you writing about resilience when you're writing about Lolly and Vega, or I guess where do you come down on this idea that there's this, you know, magic button we can push, or an algorithm we can find to help kids with resilience?
Yeah, totally. You know, my character Lolly Rockpaul is very resilient. Rosamund, Vega, and they're based on kind of the experiences. They're inspired, not based upon, but inspired by a lot of real children that I've met in my years, right? Not just through my work at the Harlem Children's Zone, but even before that, I taught for a short period of time. I taught middle school in Harlem, you know. And there are some some direct instances that inform moments in the novel, you know. The resilience is a huge thing. I remember from teaching in middle school, so many of the kids at that level have a type of energy. They're very vibrant, right? And bouncy and chatty and laughing and stuff like that. And the thing that would always really just kind of gobsmack me would be after the kids have left and you're speaking with some of the administrators or whomever, and you learn some of the backgrounds of the children and what they've been going through in their lives, and you find out about, you know, gunned down relatives or uncles upstate, you know, or homelessness and drug abuses of different types, you know. And it would just always amaze me that these kids who are so enthusiastic and lively at the same time would be going through so much trauma in their lives and were so resilient that they were, you know, able to just kind of maintain, you know, and continue and thrive, you know, which is not easy.
And at the same time, it has to be really hard to be a teacher and know that, you know, this, you know, young man here has gone through this, and this young woman here is going through this, and, you know, having to deal with them as a coherent classroom, but also be able to work with them as individual people.
Yeah, I think it's challenging. I mean, I've taught a little bit. I have not taught a lot. You know, I have so much respect for teachers. I remember the very first day, I think, that I taught at that middle school that I was mentioning, I had to prevent one student from throwing a desk on top of another student's head. And I think that was the very first class, very first hour.
Welcome to teaching.
Exactly. And I think I vividly remember standing there holding one side of the desk and the student holding the other side of the desk, you know, and calling out for help and thinking, like, what have I gotten myself into, you know? So, yeah, I mean, it's a challenge.
This is going to seem like a strange way to set up this question, but I hope you'll hear me out. I went to college in a tiny town in Iowa, which was about what you would expect from a tiny town in Iowa in terms of, you know, what it was like. We had a one-screen movie theater, and this was the early 90s. I remember one winter night going and seeing Boys in the Hood and coming out of it and knowing that I was walking out of that movie into a much different environment than someone seeing it in South Central L.A. or Harlem or wherever. And I kind of had shades of that same feeling when I was reading this book, you know, getting to the end of it and closing it and knowing I was going to bed in, you know, a fairly secure, you know, little suburban house outside of Milwaukee, which is a lot different than 125th Street in Harlem. So I guess the question is, do you think about what you'd want your young readers in, say, a small town in Iowa or suburban Milwaukee to get from this book versus what you hope a reader in Harlem will take from it?
Yeah, I mean, I actually went to school in Iowa as well. I went to college in Iowa, yeah. You know, my primary, well, you know, the novel's packed with a lot of stuff, I think. It's kind of densely packed with different types of ideas and themes. Primarily, you know, I wanted to give voice to these unheard voices, right? These kids whose stories are hardly ever told. That's number one. Number two is, particularly nowadays in this country, I think there's not a lot of understanding between different types of people. The divide that's been there for a long time seems to be widening, or maybe we're just paying closer attention to it, or I have no idea what's going on. But, you know, I think it's helpful for all people, particularly children, who are at a stage where they're learning how to navigate their lives, right? I think it's crucial that they learn about other types of people, people that are different from themselves, other ways of life, other ways of understanding, you know. And I think if we had more of that, you know, we probably would have, our country would be, our country, our world would be less divisive, you know. So that is another secondary reason for me writing this novel, you know, is just kind of understanding, listening to other people's stories, you know, and trying to come to some type of consensus.
Well, so let me ask you the most important question, and that is, did you build with Legos when you were a kid?
I did. You know, but they didn't have as much of the branding back then as they do now. Like now it's like they have Star Wars Legos or Superman Legos or whatever type of brand attached to it. And when I first started playing with Legos, they were primarily, you know, just you get a tub of bricks.
Right.
And you would, you know, make something out of them, you know. And that's really how I prefer to approach them, is that way where it's for kids. I mean, not now, but I mean, just as far as the best way for kids, I think, to approach them is that kind of basic building block that you can kind of turn into anything, that you can create anything with, you know. And I think that really stretches imaginations, that really causes kids to think in different ways and grow, you know. And so that's what I prefer, you know. And I have actually received a really great note from Lego, who they read the book and they love the book, and they thought that a lot of the ideas that I express in the book about creativity are reflections of their own kind of corporate cultural attitude about play, and also about the brick, quote unquote, the brick.
I couldn't help but think, and maybe this is too heavy, or maybe it's appropriate. You know, I couldn't help but think, as I was reading about this, of Legos as kind of a metaphor for childhood. You know, you have all these various things that could come together in the way that you want them to, if you put them together in the right way.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Lolly in the book, and Rose, they are kind of save themselves in a certain way by kind of building themselves out of their dilemma, right? Out of the situation that they're in. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely in a kind of an intentional metaphor for the struggles that we go through and how we deal with those struggles.
Well, David Barclay Moore, it's a really rewarding read. I am so glad I got a chance to read it and speak with you.
Oh, well, I'm happy that you had a chance to read it, and it was really awesome to be here talking with you.
David Barclay Moore's new book is called The Stars Beneath Our Feet. We spoke with him on his recent visit to Milwaukee for a series of readings and book events.